there doesn't have to be this oppositional relationship between a property management company, between a landlord and the tenant. I think if you really truly care about people and you really want to serve people, everyone's heart opens and all these barriers we put up just go away, and you're able to achieve incredible things. And the crazy thing is, doing the right thing, it turns out it's an incredibly profitable thing to do. We paid $11.1 million to that particular property. And we've never sold anything. We target an indefinite hold period. That's, you know, we've been doing this for 12 years. We've never sold anything, but we probably sell that today for, you know, 14 or 15 million. So that's like a 1,000% AAR or something like that on that deal.
This is your daily real estate syndication show. I'm your host, Whitney Sewell. I have a small series here, a couple of shows with a guest who kind of caught me by surprise a little bit. We have some similarities in our business and in numerous ways in our give back, but I was pleased to get him on the show and us to be able to dive into a number of things. They've experienced massive growth in a very short period of time and are just doing some amazing things in their business and how they care for their people and how they are caring for others and their give back. I love it. But his name is Nick Stageberg. He came from software startup. He's founder of different things, founder of Black Swan Real Estate. He's a CEO, he and his wife. I'm also going to have her on soon. Her name is Elaine. But ultimately, he was in tech for a number of years and experienced a big setback, what he thought was a big setback. And you're going to hear about that. But then how, man, he changed his mindset on that and how it has been just the launching point for something so much bigger, I think, than he ever expected. And I know that you're going to be able to relate to this story. But man, they have moved so fast. They're hiring people that they don't even know where they're going to put, but that are high impact people that are doing amazing things. And man, it is pushing them forward in a big way. And we're going to talk about the Silicon Valley bank collapse. And we're going to talk about how, you know, all the way back to how they got started and what happened even at a Tony Robbins event that changed everything for them moving forward. They'd even quit their jobs, you know, before jumping into, you know, real estate, into personal growth like this and creating some big goals. And I wasn't sure what they were going to do, but you're going to hear even about a hard project that they took under contract and how they tackled that, even, you know, with a smaller team, but not much experience at the time. But ultimately, they went from $3 to $300 million in 3 years, right? There's not many people that have done that and are pursuing that kind of growth. Maybe they're pursuing it, but man, most are not taking the action steps to make that happen. Nick and Elaine have done just that. And you're going to learn a lot from him today and tomorrow. Not many people go from $3 million to $300 million in 3 years. Our guest today did just that. I'm looking forward to diving in and hearing how he did that. I know you're wondering. Nick, welcome to the show.
Thanks. It's an honor to be here.
Yeah, honored to have you. Give us a little more about, you know, maybe before the $3 million, you know, what happened? What was Nick doing? And then let's, you know, how you did that, of course. Let's dive in there. And then we're going to dive into many specific things to your current business to learn from you. But give us a little background.
Sure. Yeah. So I have a kind of a diverse background. I find lots of people in the real estate industry, they came from, you know, a different profession, different industry. I'm no exception there. I have a bachelor's degree in ministry and a bachelor's degree in computer science. And I had the good fortune to lead two different tech startups through a very successful growth trajectory over a 15-year career in tech. The first startup, we went from $13 million in venture capital to $100 million in private over the course of 9 years. And the second startup, we went from a handful of employees to probably about 13 teams of engineers that I was leading over the course of 3 years. That was a startup I did for the Mayo Clinic, the entrepreneurship movement, just like how Amazon and Facebook, they're kind of too big to innovate. So they sponsor, you know, startups underneath their umbrella to innovate in their vertical. Mayo Clinic did the same thing, doing a software development consultancy that would compete with outside vendors for contracts. But repetition is the mother of all skills. So going through that process of 0 to 100 employees and, you know, massive organizational growth, revenue growth, made it really easy to do the third time. So about June of 2019, somewhere in that territory is when I stepped back from kind of my last tech venture. I thought I'd kind of conquered every mountain there was to conquer. And along the way, built a small portfolio of real estate, just buying, you know, one house the next year, two houses the next year, that sort of thing. Enough to, you know, kind of put food on the table, so to speak, for the family, if it came down to it. Went to my first Tony Robbins event, just happened to be like the day after I quit my job, and Tony has a way of getting you psyched up and setting massive goals. And I would say that's kind of where our current organization was born. We said, this real estate thing used to be kind of like our side hustle or, our retirement plan. But what if that was like the next big startup? So, my wife is my full partner in the business. She's a physician trained at the Mayo Clinic, just an incredible professional. We took sort of the culture of excellence from medicine and tech and applied that to real estate. And that's kind of how our company was born. And I would say just that background, having gone through a couple really successful startup organizations, having a really powerful business partner is what, kind of allowed us to grow our company so quickly and so successfully.
So having a business partner is what allowed you to grow so quickly and so successfully. I want to dive in there in a minute. But, you mentioned you all went to an event and you set some large goals at a Tony Robbins event, but you'd actually quit your day job before that. Is that right?
That's right.
So what was the plan? Maybe before you set those big goals, what was the plan, quitting your day job? You had to have planned to do something, I would think. But what did that look like?
I think that many people, when they've worked in a career for, I'd worked in that career for 15 years. I felt like I was meant for more than this, or there had to be more. And I was very happy with my job. And there were at least 100 people who tried to talk me out of quitting because I had just a fantastic job. I was well compensated. I was able to create tremendous good for the world. So I was working on really cool projects for the Mayo Clinic, a heavy particle accelerator, trying to fix the opioid epidemic. You got to work on really interesting problems. I just felt like there was more out there, and we had enough money that wouldn't be a financial hardship for me to step back. And I figured I'd be retired for longer than I ended up being retired. I think I was retired for all of, 48 hours or something like that. But I really actually didn't have a significant plan for income or career. I thought maybe I was retiring. I don't know. And maybe I'd spend more time with the family and the kids and my health and travel, that sort of thing. But just that was not what was in the cards.
You had to go mess that up by going to a Tony Robbins event, didn't you?
That's right. And I know myself so much better today. The last several years have been a journey of incredible personal growth. And I know myself today. I know that I'm really never going to retire. Like this is just who I am. This is when I'm really thriving the most, leading the biggest life I can possibly lead.
Yeah, that's awesome. You mentioned a journey of personal growth. Give us one or two things that helped you to grow personally. And I'll ask you, or I'll tell you, I mention this book all the time on the podcast, and it's a book by Brian Tracy called The Power of Self-Discipline, called No Excuses. And I usually tell the listeners, I should read this like at least once a year. It's just a good like kick in the tail, and motivational, all those things. But it's just a lot of truths, about self-discipline and personal growth. And so what were a couple of things for you, though, that helped you to keep pursuing personal growth?
Sure. So, most people, they don't really dive into personal growth, at least men, until they're at least 35. And I guess I kind of lived out that statistic. And that's kind of a challenging story, but I came from kind of a very adverse background, homeless as a child, moved out on my own when I was 14, and really kind of powered through by, grit and the grace of God. And through all of my entrepreneurship journey, I had made other people extraordinarily wealthy, but I never really truly made myself that wealthy. That's just not how things shook out. So like that first startup, 6 months before the company was sold, they terminated me, seized my stock options. And, I had like PTSD, like I relived that, that last day where I was terminated, over and over again, like every night when I would try to sleep. And I had a big chip on my shoulder about the whole thing, that I needed to be successful despite someone or to prove it to someone. And I still remember that first Tony Robbins event, and Tony gets you into a peak state. And he says, okay, I want you to think of the worst day of your life. I want you to think of the worst thing that's ever happened to you in your life. And immediately my mind went to that day that I kind of lost it all, so to speak, in that first tech venture. And Tony goes, now, I'm not saying this is true, but what if it was? My hallucination is, what if that worst day of your life, that worst thing that ever happened to you, what if that was actually the best thing that ever happened to you? How would that change the story you tell yourself, the narrative of your life? How would that change how you carry your body? Like, you feel a little more relaxed just with the hallucination that's actually the best thing that ever happened to you. And I thought about it for a moment, and I realized that is the truth. And today, that is my sincere belief, that getting fired from that startup is the best thing that ever happened to me. And I had a very significant, short-term, financial loss. But Like, this sounds absurd to say, but I might make as much in a month today as I made in a 9-year career with that first startup, because I kind of had to lose it all. Once we lose everything, we're free to do anything. And I sincerely thank God that was ripped away from me. I held on to it so tightly. How often do we in common companies say, you know, oh yes, I am a tech startup guy, whatever your career is, that becomes your identity. Like, that's who I was for years. That's who I was. And even if I had gotten that windfall, even if I had gotten that big payday that I was supposed to get, I would have just rolled it into the next startup and I'd still be in that tech pressure cooker world. I'd still be working there today or whatever the next, or, you know, the next evolution of that, you know, chain of private equity buys would have been. And I wouldn't have embarked on the personal growth journey that brought me to where I am today. So I am so, so, so grateful that happened to me. It's spiritual gifts are always born out of spiritual pain. Like you have to have the breakdown before you have the breakthrough. And, you know, if there's kind of one big light bulb moment, I think that's probably the biggest one that I would point to right there. And if I had not had that moment, maybe I'd be successful today. I mean, I'm sure I'd have some level of success, but nowhere near the level of success I have today. And I'd have nowhere near the happiness, the fulfillment, the satisfaction I have with it. So many people out there that are successful are driven by spite. They're trying
Yeah. Some of the biggest billionaires, some of the big, you know, most wealthiest people that I've read about, they had some of the worst childhoods you could possibly imagine, right? I mean, they did. And they came out fighting because of that childhood. It makes me think also when you said, you know, being broke down before you have a breakthrough, it's interesting the questions you ask as well about your worst day. You know, Tony asked, you know, and then what if that was your best day? And man, just that mental switch, right? That, man, when I think about it differently, what can happen? But it made me think of even a boot camp, you know, like military boot camp. I know for me, you know, that was a time of like being broke down, but man, being built back up, and you come out a different person. Right? I mean, you do, but it's really because of the mental change, right? It's, yes, you're stronger because of it, but you know, that strength, the, you know, physical strength doesn't always last. But man, the mental things that I learned through military and boot camp and being overseas for a year, all those things, those difficulties and childhood things that happened with me as well, changed
Absolutely. Everything
for us, right? For me and for my family, you know, and our business and all these things. So I can completely relate. I'm grateful that you shared that story, because I'm hoping that the listeners will ask themselves that same question, right? And so, yeah, I want to dive into your business though a little bit. You know, you went from, what I read, a half dozen employees to 30, you know, in the last year. And so give us a little bit about your business and, you know, let's dive into how you did that and why.
Yeah, sure. So we're a very, you know, mission-driven organization, a very kind of values-driven organization, a very spiritual organization. So we have kind of a radically different, you know, structure to our private equity fund. We have no fees whatsoever. 100% of our profit goes to our investors until they've gotten a full return of capital. And then it's a 50-50 split after that. So I think we really put the needs of our investors ahead of our own in the mathematical kind of sense of the word. 5% of the profit from our organization goes to charity. We built a school last year. So I thought that was like the coolest thing I've ever done in my life. Found an abandoned 40,000 square foot office building and did an adaptive reuse, converting it into a school that my children now attend, along with, you know, hundreds of other kiddos. 5% of our profit goes back to our staff in a profit share. In all that we do, we're asking ourselves, how do we create more real tangible value for our tenants, for our investors? So just how do we create as much value? And I think that relentless focus on value creation on service is what's, you know, what's allowed us to grow so quickly, to raise capital at a time when, you know, it's been challenging for some people to raise capital, to find really good deals, because I'd say we're willing to work on the difficult problems that most people aren't willing to touch. You know, we bought a 100 unit townhome subdivision a few months ago where 50% of the units were in rent collections, and, you know, any assumption you could make about that community is probably accurate just with that one piece of data. Like, we own our property management company. We're vertically integrated. You can't hire a third-party property management company to take over a property like that. That's something where you have to have a servant's heart to dig into something like that. And we've been able to turn that place around so fast. It's unreal, just by going door to door and saying, listen, we're so sorry that previous property management company, you know, failed you and did not help you stay accountable. And now you're, you know, $7,000 behind on rent. You know, we're here to serve you. There's no judgment in our hearts. You know, if we can help you get caught up, great. If you decide the best thing for you is to have a clean slate, you can leave anytime, give you a refund of your security deposit, a prorated rent refund. We'll forgive your back debt. Whatever we can do to help you get a new start and move on to the next stage, whatever that looks like. And there doesn't have to be this oppositional relationship between a property management company, between a landlord and the tenant. I think if you really, truly care about people and you really want to serve people, everyone's heart opens and all these barriers we put up just go away and you're able to achieve incredible things. And the crazy thing is doing the right thing. It turns out it's an incredibly profitable thing to do. We paid $11.1 million to that particular property. And we've never sold anything. We target an indefinite hold period. That's, you know, we've been doing this for 12 years. We've never sold anything, but we probably sell that today for, you know, 14 or 15 million. So that's a, you know, like a 1,000% AAR or something like that on that deal if in some sort of hypothetical sales scenario. So I don't know. So there's a couple, you know, anecdotes or whatever to give you a little bit of background about our organization. And, you know, I think the values that have really driven us to where we are today.
Are you a real estate syndicator or professional who is looking to grow your business in 2023? Are you tired of attending networking meetup after meetup and thinking that there has to be a better way? Have you ever thought about podcast guesting? According to Statista, podcasts are going to reach over 100 million listeners by 2024. Podcast guesting allows you to tap into that network of listeners. At Podcasting U, they have worked with hundreds of investors to secure guest placements on thousands of podcasts so they can raise more capital, generate brand awareness, and increase their credibility. If you're interested in learning how podcast guesting can help grow your real estate business in 2023, go to podcastingu.com/syndication to book your free discovery call. I wanted to highlight some of the things you mentioned around the structure. And is this every deal? Are you doing single asset funds? Or are you doing large multi-asset funds? Clarify that.
Yeah.
Or both?
And so our journey has been one of service. And I come from the tech world. So it's all about incremental improvement and growth. So we manage our company the same way I would manage like an agile software development project or something of that nature. So we iterated towards success. We had kind of a small portfolio to start with. And we were at this point that I think every real estate investor gets to where they have enough properties that it's a hassle, but not enough that they really have the economies of scale and levels of management and stuff that it seems like the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow is awfully far away. So we said we really have three options. So we can hire a third party property management company to manage our properties. We're self-managing, 20 properties or something like that. Or I had the bag of tools in my van and I was driving around, when I was not managing 13 teams of engineers, leasing units and doing maintenance tickets and stuff. So we hire third party property management. We could sell our properties and become, LP investors in other people's ventures, or we could start a property management company and do third-party management for other people. And that would help us kind of race to the economies of scale that we would need to really build a team. And I love building teams. So we started the property management company, started doing third-party property management, just over-delivered for all of our third-party property management clients. I think most people most of the time hate their property management company. It's just something about the way that I think there's a disalignment of incentives in most property management kind of contracts and stuff. But it's not hard to win business. And then those people that we just over-delivered for, those became our first investors, our first partners. And we said, okay, we've turned around this property that was failing and we've made you a ton of money or saved your bacon. Like, would you like to come in and invest with us on this apartment building we want to buy here? And we started doing joint venture partnerships until we had so many of those going that it started to become, we had five different, JVs under contract at one time. We're like, this is getting kind of ridiculous. So we launched a private equity fund, and now we've had, multiple rounds of that private equity fund. And, we don't get too fancy with it. So, all of our investors, they put that money into a bucket and then we deploy that capital. And we've over time refined that structure I just described where there's, no fees. We don't take any profit until our investors get a full return of capital. And then a 50-50 split after that. We target an indefinite hold period. It's a BRRRR business model. So instead of targeting a sale, we target a cash out refi to return capital to our investors. It's tougher. It's easier to sell than it is to refi. But if you can get to that infinite rate of return where you have no money in the deal, and then you can roll that into the next deal and the next deal, you're able to exponentially grow your equity. And this is the business model that we've been using, you know, over and over again, you know, at first with our own, you know, personal portfolio. And then when we decided to start working with investors here just a few years ago. So as we've grown, we've, you know, pulled more legs of our empire, you know, in-house. So we have in-house full-time Sure. maintenance staff, in-house full-time facility staff.
Speak to the investor that works for, you know, just like an infinite hold period. You know, obviously, you know, many will ask about, you know, when obviously do I get my funds back, you know, and it sounds like you get that as well. And you're looking for that refi to be able to do that. Just talk through that a little bit about what kind of investors does that work for? Maybe some of the typical questions, you know, that you would get from investors on this kind of structure.
Yeah. So we think of this as a generational wealth vehicle, essentially. This is the kind of thing that your children will inherit. And people do often ask, okay, how do I get my money back? Well, I mean, you get your money back actually quite quickly on the front end of the deal. And then at this point, you have to ask yourself, I have all my money back. I keep getting these checks. If I were to cash out of the deal, so to speak, if I were to, you know, like sell my remaining equity in the deal to someone else, you're going to have like a tax liability event associated with that. You're going to have a capital gain and you're going to have to recapture depreciation and you'll come out ahead, but it's not going to be a huge difference. We joke, you know, why would you ever want to kill the golden goose? And we're Black Swan Real Estate, so it's a fun metaphor to use there. So the investors who get it, like they are all in. We are their favorite investment vehicle. Investors that are looking for, you know, kind of a short-term play and they're nervous about being invested in something for the long term, you know, we're not a good fit for them and that's okay for us. But this is the kind of thing that you would pass on, you know, to your children. And at some point we will sell. At some point we will get, you know, an offer we can't refuse from Blackstone and you know, we'd be remiss not to accept such an offer, but we're never targeting a sale. I mean, we get offers, you know, all the time, but I don't see us ever really listing our properties.
Wow. No, that's incredible. Just to think through that growth and just holding on, you know, forever and not ever planning to sell. It's just a different business model than it sounds very interesting. I love the give back as well. You know, just dedicating the 5%, you know, going to charity and even back to the staff. Speak to maybe that a little bit. You know, how is that structured as far as even the give back, you know, to charity and to staff?
Yeah. So we have a lot of things that we do to serve, to give. For example, we have a course. Anyone can go to meetblackswan.com and check it out. It's a pay what you can model. And 100% of the revenue goes to charity. You know, we shoulder all the expenses for that. That's just our way of giving back. We see it as just our way of serving the universe. We give away our whole playbook. We joke, we call that the cookbook. So if you want to do what we've done, like go check out the course, give what you can to support it. Again, 100% of the revenue goes to charity. And then if you implement our business model and somehow put us out of business with it, I think that would make the world a better place. I'd be probably just as excited as like Elon Musk if Ford put him out of business with electric vehicles or something like that. So we joke, we call it the cookbook. And then our private equity fund, that's the restaurant. So if you take a look at the cookbook and you say, man, this looks delicious, but seems like a lot of work and seems like these people know what they're doing, we're going to go to the restaurant and check it out. That's your option there. And that course is essentially like our operations manual for our team. We have the light fixture we install and the flooring we install and how we get the debt and everything in that course. And then we just love to give back. So, you know, I'd mentioned, you know, building a school here. You know, so every morning I drop my kiddos off at this school and that is the best moment of my day there. My wife serves on the board of directors. We found a scrappy startup school that was in the basement of a, you know, 70-year-old church building. And it wasn't exactly the greatest, you know, facility to enjoy. And we thought, man, what if our kids didn't even go to the school at the time, but we really liked the energy, you know, the principal, like their school uniforms say, gratitude is my attitude. There's, you know, signs on all the walls, like the power of yet, you know, I don't know how to do that yet, or I'm not big enough yet. There's mindset training from the youngest age. My 3-year-old came home, or I'm sorry, 4-year-old came home, and he doesn't know how to write yet. He doesn't know how to write words yet, but he had this grid, this little 12 blank grid, and he had pictures that he had drawn with crayons of various things. And I'm like, well, what is this? And he said, well, this is my goals for the year. So they had to write down, you know, 12 things they wanted to do or experience or whatever throughout the year. And so he wanted to ride his bicycle in the summer or maybe get a new bicycle. And so he went through his goals for the year. Like, I didn't even know goal setting was a thing until like 5 years ago. And, you know, I'm 39 years old, so I can't imagine what your life is like when you learn how to set goals and learn mindset before you even know how to write. But I think the kids are going to have some interesting outcomes. I just felt like something that I felt called to support in a big, you know, financial way. And I don't know how to run a school. That's not something I have the heart to do, but I would love to build a school to use my real estate skill set. My wife, she serves on the board of directors and we do everything we can to support them. But, you know, we're building a, there's a local homeless shelter and we're helping them upgrade residential commissioned kitchen to a commercial kitchen. There's another, it's a shelter for women and children. So not a homeless shelter, but I guess I don't know what I guess it is kind of a homeless shelter.
And speak to the profit share for, I love that, you know, as far as to give back to employees as well. How is that structured? What does that look like?
Yeah. So our employees get 5% of my wife and I's equity in all of our ventures, basically as a discretionary compensation scheme. You know, trying to do like a profits only interest or whatever can get legally complicated. There can be like tax consequences to people receiving equity, but not yet receiving income. So I recommend just doing it as a discretionary, you know, compensation scheme. And it's a very significant amount indeed. So I'll go ahead and calculate, here's what equity we have in the whole enterprise. And here's what this individual's equity is based on their years of service and role in the company. So that if we were to sell the whole portfolio today, you would get a check for X number of dollars. And it's a fairly significant amount of money, especially for our staff who have been with us for a long time being, you know, 2 years. So they have a huge incentive to make sure that those assets deliver. At least once a month, we do education talking about net operating income and how when we can, you know, push rent an extra $25 a month or reduce expenses on, you know, cleaning or maintenance, it has this hugely exaggerated impact on the value of the asset. Everyone in our company from, you know, down to our cleaners understands our business model and how it's a race to get to a cash out refi. And we do that by improving the net operating income of the business. And by getting to where we return our capital to investors, that's when we profit. And that's when we can hand out profit share checks to our staff. So there is like, you know, very perfect alignment of incentives. And in the moment, staff can see, okay, we really knocked it out of the park on this asset. I can feel how we turned this asset around. And now I'm getting a check because that outcome was achieved. So we love to just financially reward our staff, period. But we also really love to align incentives so that they understand how the business makes money and how they financially benefit from the business making money.
All right, Nick, there's so many other things I want to get to. So let's continue to another episode. I just want the listeners to know, you know, we're going to dive into a couple other things that Nick is doing at their business. And they went from a half a dozen to 30 employees, or, you know, all these things. And what was it? $3 million to $300 million in 3 years. I want to learn more about those things, but you'll have to come back tomorrow to do that. But before we do, Nick, how can listeners get in touch with you and learn more about you?
Yeah, anyone here can go to meetblackswan.com, meetblackswan.com. We have a link to our mailing list if you want to sign up for that. We do an educational event, you know, almost every week, you know, several times a month. We actually just did a webinar last night, on the spot webinar on the Silicon Valley Bank collapse and how that impacts real estate investors. You know, all of our educational content is 100% free. People are welcome to donate if they want to, but 100% free. There's a link to my calendar. If anyone wants to just block time on my calendar, I'm happy to connect and offer value any way I can. We don't have any investment options that are open right now, but there is a wait list for when our next investment opportunity opens up. You can, you know, be at the head of the list when that comes along. So lots of ways to connect. Just go to meetblackswan.com.
Thank you for being with us again today. I hope that you have learned a lot from the show. Don't forget to like and subscribe. I hope you're telling your friends about the Real Estate Syndication Show and how they can also build wealth in real estate. You can also go to lifebridgecapital.com and start investing today.